Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
It's Friday. The Friday edition of Canuck Central with Scott Rintoul and Bick Nizar. I saw this meme going around, and maybe you saw it too, Bick, where somebody said, hey, it's Wednesday, or as we just know it now, day. Does every day feel the exact same to you?
Yeah, to some degree. Like I know when it's Monday and I know when it's Friday. After that, it's just chaos.
Yeah, and I think part of that has to do with people have a feel to certain days. Saturday means that there's going to be hockey night in Canada, and there's certain nights during the week where there's a better chance of having a Canucks game, and this was a big one on the calendar. Friday, March 27th, was supposed to be Canucks Flames, a game that was certainly going to determine some playoff seating, maybe a playoff spot. I was really looking forward to this game.
I've been looking forward to every game that isn't coming up on the schedule right now. You know, I know today's the Calgary game, but I mean, give me the Anaheim game. Give me the San Jose game from 2 days ago. I'd take just about anything right now.
Yeah, I think most people would. I guess my point was I was looking forward to this one more than others. And maybe it's because it's a geographic rival and it's within the division and they're near each other in the standings. But there were other games that didn't have the same gravity to them on the schedule, at least not from my vantage point. Today's the one where it really hit me that we're missing that buzz around hockey right now that we would have been getting.
Yeah, for sure, especially considering the chase that was coming down. You heard the clip there in the update, you know, just Horvat and you know, kind of razzing Mark Giordano about, you know, the playoff chase itself. Like, tonight would have been such an awesome game, and the players know that even as they're on break and having these conference calls. It would have been a blast.
Yeah, it certainly would have been. We're going to talk a little bit about management today. We're going to hear a clip from Travis Green during the course of this first half hour on how he handled Pettersson and Hughes, or at least what his approach was over the first couple of seasons, which I thought had a lot of insight to it. Travis Green has been dispensing some pearls this week on your show on Hockey Central today. Have you found the same?
He's a guy full of perspective, and you know, he's a very thought-provoking coach anyways. And I think a lot of times we kind of get used to it to some degree, and there's that, you know, cat and mouse game that he plays at the podium, and so maybe we just get used to it. And you know, when we haven't heard from him for a couple of weeks, and he starts talking again, yeah, you know, he's dropped pearls of wisdom as you said it. And it was a good interview on Hockey Central Day on 590, and he went into quite a bit through his entire spectrum of his coaching career. But I know we'll play the Pettersson and Hughes stuff in just a second, but it was really interesting.
Yeah, let's have a listen to it right now. For those who haven't heard it, he was asked on Hockey Central about the approach he took with Elias Pettersson as a rookie and the one he has taken with Quinn Hughes.
Very similar path or stories, I guess, or from my standpoint, when Elias came in last year, we weren't quite sure. We knew he was a good young player. Obviously, been playing over in Europe, so we'd even seen less of him. I was hell-bent that I was going to try him at center. Mm-hmm. I know he'd played a lot of wing over in Sweden. Just watching video and watching his skill level, I felt like we had to give this guy a chance to play center. And a lot of it was because we needed a centerman bad, I felt. And I would say it took him a good rate all the way from the Penticton rookie camp through to the start of the season for him to feel comfortable there. But we were seeing progressions daily with how smart he was. And we all know the year he had. And then fast forward to Quinn Hughes. We got a little glimpse of him the year before. And again, you don't know right away with young players. You don't know how good they're going to be. I've talked openly about it a lot. I don't want to put any more expectations on players than there already is, especially in a Canadian market. I try to take it off of them, if anything, especially young guys. And man, this guy came in those five games. His progression of ice time went from game one, 14 minutes. I looked down at Bomber and said, hey, I think we can crank him up. Game two, 16. Bomber, I think we can crank him up. 18, 20, 22 by the fifth game in St. Louis when they needed to win a game. So by game five, we were like, hey, this guy, he's pretty good. And so we had the summer to get ready for it. And again, when he came in his first year, a lot of expectations, especially after the five games. And a lot of people were wondering, okay, why are they not? We didn't even put him on the first power play. And, you know, there was a reason for our method to the madness. We felt like, you know, we could see it in practice. He's still trying to learn the routes. He's still trying to, you know, the breakouts in an NHL power play compared to where he was coming from. You know, there's a lot of different intricacies. He changed on the fly, you know, little nuances, and he was still trying to grasp it, which we felt fine. And we really, the reason we didn't want to do it, we didn't want to start the season, him not quite be quite ready for it or have it in his mind what we're doing, and then us have to take him off it. We didn't want the power play to struggle, him, and then to take him off of it, we thought would be detrimental. And again, you go back to expectations. So we waited five, six, seven games. You know, there's always a lull, and then he was ready. He was running his routes much better, you know, just the simple of walking the line in the NHL compared to college, and we put him up there. So, and the year he had has been, up to date, has been fantastic. It's very similar to Pettersson, a guy that we feel like not only adds to our organization, our franchise, but has changed our franchise and the way we look, the way we feel about our group and the excitement level going forward.
There's a lot there, Bick, and we could spend the entire segment on that clip in my estimation, but we got a couple other things to get to. What stood out for you of Travis Green's answer?
Well, when you talk about how they wanted to integrate him into the power play, right? It's the same principle they talk about when it comes to AHL call-ups, right? And you think of someone like Zach MacEwen, they don't want a guy to come up and have a short stint and go back. Sometimes out of necessity with injuries that happens, sure. But when they make the intent of calling a guy up, it's okay, you're here to stay. Trent Call, Ryan Johnson have talked about that so much of their development is focused on permanency. Like, we stay here, we'll sort you out. And then when you get that opportunity, like, we don't want to see you anymore. Like, you've graduated to the NHL and we're all thrilled and all that. And when you think of how that principle applies to what Travis Green was talking about, they didn't want to put him on power play one to begin. And you got to remember too, in the preseason, the power play with Edler on power play one was like clicking, and that's what you have to go off of. So they didn't put Quinn Hughes there right away, as much as we're all excited about what's happening. But it's the same principle. It's like, we didn't think you were ready yet, and there were still some things he had to work on. And then when he did, you're there to stay. Like, that's his spot now for what? 12, 13 years, he's going to be there. And it's kind of like a young QB in the NFL. You don't want to yo-yo him in and out of the lineup. And NFL coaches are always cognizant of the idea that if they put a young QB in too early, like, that's the transition. That's the passing of the torch. You can't just keep pulling him out, putting a veteran back in, put him back in and pull him back out. You can't do that because you're going to shatter the confidence. And this is part of measured steps along the way to make sure that's permanent for Quinn Hughes. And we're there now, as I was just saying, like, he's there for the next decade. And it's, I know five games doesn't seem like a lot, but A, it's a testament to how Quinn Hughes picks things up and the trust Travis Green was willing to afford him.
The five games thing really sticks out to me because they did a very good job of not letting on how much of an impression Quinn Hughes made on them, how big of a role they thought he could play on this year's team, because they didn't want to have public expectation grow to a place where Hughes could never meet or even exceed it. They protected that information, but we wondered at the end of last year, well, what does all this mean? These are meaningless games for the Vancouver Canucks. Yeah, it's easy to throw a guy out there for 20, 22 minutes because what does it matter? Throw him into the deep end. They took a lot from those games, and it made a big impression on how they wanted to come into this season.
Yeah, and just seeing the way they talk about, you know, ramping up their minutes too, right? And this is the thing. You find out how much of a load Quinn Hughes can take on himself. And, you know, yes, you want to start with baby steps for a young player, but we've seen how quickly he learns and how he develops. And even at this course of the season where we were, it didn't look like he was slowing down. And they've talked about how they've tried to add new principles to his game. And we've seen his minutes increase over and over and over again, you know, reaching close to 30 minutes sometimes. And it's exciting to see from the point of view of, like, this is scratching the surface still. We talked to Ish about career season, breakout seasons. Like, we don't have a frame of reference for Quinn Hughes because it's just the 1 year, but you would expect progression at some point in his career. And that's a scary proposition for the rest of the NHL, but a tantalizing one for the Canucks and Canucks fans.
Speaking of tantalizing, the thought of hockey coming back, the thought of playoff hockey returning to the Lower Mainland, tantalizing for Canucks fans. Bo Horvat was on a conference call today, and questions were thrown at Bo Horvat, a lot of other NHLers. Connor McDavid was on that call, Mark Giordano, and Horvat was asked about how to get the season going again, if they're able to get it going, and how to get the playoffs going as well. Here's what he had to say.
I was just going to say, yeah, either go by points percentage or start, or, you know, play some more regular season games. To make it completely fair, you'd want to play regular season games and have, you know, more games, to get in. But if we're going to start playoffs right away, then obviously, you want to, I don't know if you guys would be in or not, but definitely by percentage, and I think that would put us in. But it's tough to make that call. That's for sure.
Very Canadian to apologize in the middle of an answer from Bo Horvat there, but he goes the way that most Canucks fans would expect him to go, and that is with the scenario that benefits his team and the one that does seem fair here on the West Coast. Hey, points percentage, you know where that puts us, third in the Pacific. We're in. Let's go, guys.
Yeah, and but just on the idea of playing some games before we get to a playoff, like I think Connor McDavid as well said on that call, it's going to be tough to step right into the playoffs because it's game one. It's going to be Calgary versus Edmonton potentially, and you're going to have guys running around to kill each other who haven't played in 2 months. It's not really going to look like a real NHL game to some degree, and that makes a lot of sense. And we're still trying to think of ways to play this out. I'm not sure if we're ever going to come up with a good solution, but it just kind of goes to the point of like our realities have changed. So we have to, come up with new ideas that that fit our new reality.
Sky Rental, Bick Nizar, let's talk about the season that has played itself out to date for the Vancouver Canucks, and not go through every game, not go through every month, but really, what does it mean for the guy who put this team together, Jim Benning? We focused on a different area of the team through each of our shows this week, Bick, and we now land on the doorstep of management. And this is one that for a lot of fans will be tricky to grade. Everybody has their inherent bias as to where their standards were, what they want to happen with this management team. But a lot of this was going to come down to, do the Canucks make the playoffs? If they don't, how close are they? And what does that mean for what Jim Benning put together in Vancouver? How much of the answer do you believe we have already?
Man, I don't know if we have the answer for the important question of, because he had to make the playoffs. Whatever the bar was, like, he had to show that there was playoff games. And, from Travis Green's perspective, it was different, as we talked about on Wednesday, and it changes obviously for another level of how you view this when it comes to Jim Benning. But like, you had to make the playoffs, and of the things that we don't have an answer for, this is one of the unfortunate ones because we needed a one. And it's tough because, as I've said in the past, this is two different tenures we have to look at it for Jim Benning. And realistically, like, since he got his first extension, not the one last summer, the first one in February, it's hard to find a lot of missteps in these 2 years when it comes to Jim Benning. Is that fair? Like, I went through them, and I basically picked out three.
Well, they would all have to do with free agent signings in the opinion of those who are critical.
Okay, so here's the three I got. One is, so he signs his contract, and then almost immediately, like, Eric Gudbranson gets his contract. Now, that turns out okay, but I'm just judging that move in on its particular. Like, it wasn't necessarily the greatest at the time.
No, of course it wasn't, and people scratched their heads about it. And, again, it's one thing to make a mistake. It's another to be able to move on for it. And, obviously, he signed a contract that was palatable enough to other teams, specifically the Pittsburgh Penguins, that he was able to move on for it. So, that is, at worst, a wash, in my opinion. If not, sure. Hey, you kept an asset. You got a better asset, in our opinion, for it. This worked out.
The other one is, like, the whole Michael DiPietro incident of just not having a goalie. Like, that to me is, it seems like a minor thing, but they took a risk that was very obviously could have blown up, and it did blow up in their face. Like, that one to me didn't speak well on the processes of management. And the third one is probably the Michael Ferland signing. And I've left, like, the Jay Beagle signing off of this because I guess that's one of the missteps, but it's not exactly a high leverage one. Like, the Michael Ferland one is kind of a high leverage one.
Yeah, they decided to gamble on that one, absolutely. And this can sort of work out, though the player never has contributed here in Vancouver. It works out and again, becomes not a pass, but one that you almost get a get-out-of-jail-free card with from a management point of view if this is LTIR and it doesn't end up counting against the cap. We're not the ones that have to pay the contract if Michael Ferland's never to play again, and that'll be covered by insurance if and when that happens. But yes, they took a calculated risk. Other teams weren't willing to go in with extra years. The Canucks said, we'll take that gamble, and it certainly didn't bear out. Now, the other two that you touched on is the Roussel Beagle signings. People had a problem with the term there, and then the other is the Tyler Myers signing where people had a problem there.
Yeah, and I guess the Beagle one in relation to letting Nick Dowd walk, and I get it, right? He had a pretty good season right after. That's like the fourth one I would say, okay, you haven't necessarily gotten total value out of that. But also, what are we talking about when it comes to how much is that taken up of the cap, right? Now we're seeing some of the issues of it. But I'm not going to sit here and say there hasn't been some value out of what they've gotten out of Jay Beagle. Maybe not necessarily on the ice, but this was always about more than just on ice play when it comes to signing Jay Beagle. And it's $3 million. It's not the end of the world. It's not Louis Erickson-esque, right? Like, that's been a big issue in the past. Like, $3 million is a drop in the ocean to $81 million a year cap.
Yeah, in isolation it is, and the argument that has always been made on the other side, and I do think it's fair to a certain extent, is that it's not the Beagle contract or the Roussel contract. It's those added together and added to the Brandon Sutter contract, and that has been the argument, that all of that margin that you could have saved yourself that adds up prevents you from doing something else. That has always been the collective argument of the criticism along the way.
Yeah, and then, you know, when you go through all the other pieces that they've done since, again, I'm grading this on his first contract extension for Jim Benning, right? Because the tenure before was, you know, you're still seeing ramifications of it today with Louis Erickson and all that. But in that second half of his tenure, like, you've got the Josh Levo trade. You got that, you know, small trade, but Michael Delzato kind of wore it as welcome here with the fan base, and Luke Shen was praised. And you got Pearson for Gudbranson. And you think about the contract negotiations, like Alex Edler, Brock Besser, like, those were tough negotiations, and they played them the right way to get what they wanted out of it. And then the JT Miller trade, and the Tyler Toffoli trade being the latest transaction. Like, there's a lot of positives here in the last 2 years.
I would agree with that assessment, and I also believe that we are going to be at a situation where ownership is forced to say, you know what, there's a lot more positive than negative out of this season. We'll never know what would have become down the stretch, and certainly that could have swayed our opinion, but there's more good than bad. If this team plays any more this season, Bick, it's going to be in a playoff position. If the NHL finds a way to get back at some point this summer and conduct whatever type of tournament the Stanley Cup gets awarded by, the Vancouver Canucks are going to be a part of it. And it's not perfect, and some people will think it's concocted. They're going to be a playoff team, which to me suggests Jim Benning gets to continue with his plan beyond this year.
This whole situation we're all living in, you know, we've talked winners and losers before. Like, Jim Benning himself is probably a winner out of all this because, yeah, it buys him another season. to lead this team. And the answer that we needed on this season is going to get kicked down the road. So it's kind of a stay of execution for him to see what happens over the next season. Can he implement his plan even more and, you know, kind of double down on some of the philosophies and build this team out in his vision to start leading them to consistent playoff appearances? He's going to get that opportunity now.
Well, and it's an important development if that's what occurs. And all it is staying the course. It's not needing to re-sign Jim Benning. He's already got the contract in place. Hey, there's a coaching staff that is going to want extensions beyond this season. They've got next year, but there's never any coach in the NHL that wants to go into that quote-unquote lame duck year. And by proxy, doesn't the staff at least get some sort of extension beyond that? But it's the guy at the top, Jim Benning, because there are some big things on the horizon for this team that need to be negotiated. This is the summer when eventually you're going to be able to at least make your first offers to Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. You may not be able to get anything done, but you can start with that process. You got to figure out what you're doing with Jacob Markstrom, Tyler Toffoli. What are you doing with Troy Stetcher? Jake Virtanen's going to need an extension. There are a lot of management decisions that have to occur this summer, so knowing that the same regime is going to be in charge is a very big first domino to fall.
Why specifically does it have to be this regime? I'm just trying to explore your thought there.
Well, because if another regime comes in, Bick, they may have an entirely different view of what the plan is right now and what those players mean. I think we have a pretty good idea of what Jim Benning thinks about Jacob Markstrom and what he thinks about all of the other players I mentioned. Someone else comes in, they may come in with a completely different viewpoint, and I would put as evidence the Dave Nonis transition to Mike Gillis. Those are two general managers that saw things entirely different. You brought in a guy in Mike Gillis who at his introductory press conference said something to the effect of, well, we'll figure out where the Sedins fit. I'm not sure they're first-line players. That's something we have to evaluate right now, and that is a far cry from the way the previous management felt about it. And look, we know where Mike Gillis got with that, but it is a different viewpoint. It is a different plan. So it is going to feel entirely different.
Yeah, like, consistency is great if you're going in a positive direction consistently, right? And you know, we haven't necessarily seen consistent positive results. It's going in a direction that we're encouraged by, but you know, we've been halted here of what the conclusion of those results are. But look, I see what you're saying as far as having a plan put forth by the guy who created it. But
I'm not saying that's more important or less important than having someone else new come in with a plan, Bick. I'm just saying that it's an important decision to make, because the one thing we have knowledge of is how this management group operates. And that gives us at least some type of predictor as to how it will operate moving forward.
Sure, but you know, just kind of arguing semantics here. It's just like fresh eyes could have a benefit as well. Because there's so much invested in some of these players, like what if they make the wrong decisions because they're so invested in certain guys, right? It's understanding when to walk away. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
I'm not trying, and again, don't read into my comments. I'm not telling you that's the right decision, the wrong decision. I'm just telling you it's an important decision. And if that's the one they make, then we have a basis to figure out what they're going to do next.
Yeah, and there's a litany of tough decisions of this upcoming offseason. And, you know, we've talked about is bringing all the guys back and actually fitting them all under the cap, and however that plays out, is that an aggressive way? Because, like, I view aggressive as and tough as moving off some of these players. And there's a lot of conversations we've had this week that you could have on these players to say, okay, I think I'm ready to move off of him, whether it be a Chris Tanev, whether it be a Brandon Sutter or a Jake Virtanen, Tanner Pearson. Like, there's some guys that you could make tough decisions on that open up a wild expanse of roster construction then to fit in the contracts you're talking about of Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. And the other thing, and it's tough when we don't know what the cap might look like down the road, like, you know, we were just going to talk about this week on the program with Walker and Sat of if the cap goes down, that kind of helps out to some degree Jim Benning to some degree, because if Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes now have to sign 8 $9 million contracts instead of $10, $11 million contracts. Well, we know a new US TV deal is going to come in. We know Seattle's money is going to come in. League revenue should pick up down the road. So if you can get these guys signed to, you know, longer term deals at a fraction of the price, well, the cap's going to should bounce back at some point. And suddenly you're going to get value that way.
Well, I suppose if you had some sort of cap certainty over 2 years instead of just one, if it goes down temporarily, Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson's agents just say, let's talk next summer, boys. We think it's going back up.
Yeah, that's part of this as well.
For sure. Bick Nizar, Scott Rintoul, Alex Auld set to join us next. Keep those comments coming in. We see them. We'll try to get to a couple of them next right here on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Almost, J-Mo. Almost the weekend, buddy. Scott Rintoul, Bick Nizar with you. This is Canucks Central, soon to be joined by Alex Auld. I promised I'd get to a text. Here it is. Bick, I'll read it, then you can react to it. This comes to us from Ken in Burnaby. It's on Travis Green, who says, Green has done an okay job with Pettersson, Brock Besser, and Hughes. I give him a C-plus at best, as much as I would expect from a Green inexperienced coach in the same vein as a Willie D. Unfortunately, in my honest opinion, this is a lot less than what I had hoped. His ability to assess top/elite talent and deploy them appropriately is poor. He has always been late to the party when finally deploying these kids at the behest of almost all the scribes and fans, and then only when desperate, always too cautious to deploy them too soon for fear of making a mistake. That in itself has been his mistake over and over, especially with Hughes. I and most could see Hughes as a very special elite player after only less than three shifts in a preseason game 2 years ago. Green needs to be more decisive ahead of the curve to get my full respect as an NHL coach. He is light years away from a Trotz, for example. His hesitancy probably cost him several points this year to date. Lengthy two-part text from Ken. What do you have to say, Bick Nizar?
You're right. He is light years away from Barry Trotz. It's year one of Travis Green being a real NHL coach with a real NHL roster. So, of course, he's light years away from a guy that's been coaching for 20-plus years. Like, I understand that's a standard you have to get to, but then your expectation of what Travis Green is right now is totally misguided. Like, Barry Trotz has been coaching for a really long time. Right? He was the first Predators head coach, was that back in 97, 98? I can't even put those two thoughts together. I understand that you want certain decisions to be made and it's not urgent enough for you. He's making them on his pace. And if you're right and wrong, and Travis Green has said this as well, like, he's going to be wrong sometimes. It's looking back and figuring out when he was right, when he was wrong, what processes led you to making the wrong decision. Can you correct those processes and evolve with them as you become greater in your coaching career? It's ludicrous to me to put that standard on Travis Green in the first year we get to evaluate him.
And it's fair to say there are times Travis Green could have leaned on younger players earlier instead of going with veterans. I'm just not sure how you can argue with second place Calder, first place Calder, and likely first place Calder with the three players that were in question, as though anybody could have put them out there, anybody could have deployed them, and they would have had more success than they ultimately have had. Let's see what Alex Auld has to say about that. He joins us as he does every single Friday on Canuck Central. How are you, Aldi? How's isolation treating you?
Well, I'm as well as can be expected, I guess. All things considered, things are going pretty well at the Auld household. I'm happy to report.
I'm glad to hear that. We wanted to talk management with you today, and we'll do that in just a second. But just on the heels of that text from Ken in Burnaby, your thoughts on how Travis Green has deployed his young players, has worked with his young players and developed them over the last couple of seasons?
I agree with you, Scotty. Like, I think it's hard to argue with some of the results they've had from an individual point of view, on especially when you look at the key young players being those, you know, whether Besser, Pettersson, and Quinn Hughes this year. And what I think a lot of people fail to realize is is just how difficult it is to transition to the National Hockey League and be a complete player. And that's part of it too. Now, all three of those players had tremendous amounts of success from an offensive point of view, especially in their rookie seasons. And when you look at it, really, it's about trusting them as rookies. All three of those guys did some really good things, but there were still areas of their games that need to improve. And slowly over time, you earn that trust. Now, sometimes you look at it and you're like, well, why wouldn't you want to have this young player whose upside is higher than whatever veteran you want to pick? And you look at that ice time, but it's about the full team game. It's about balancing all of your options. And it's also about needing, you can't just play one player all game. You need these other players to be a part of it. And so it's always a work in progress, and no one's ever perfect in how they deploy their players. But what I see is a continued growth and evolution in the young players. And it's outside of just those big three as well. I mean, you look at some of the other young players that have come along, and I think of a guy like Tyler Motte and how they've utilized him and moved him along as he's earned more. And I'm not saying he's playing on the power play or first line, but he's becoming a more and more valuable player in this lineup. And so when you're good at communicating and you're good at working with young players, and it's not just Travis, but it's the whole coaching staff, then there's a development pattern that does occur. It remains to be seen, because some of the lower end players are a longer sort of trajectory. Like, where does Adam Gaudette end up being? But he's a guy as well that, as he's earned more and worked harder and understood what it takes to be a pro, he's earning more and more ice time and more trust from the coaching staff. So I think overall it's been pretty good. Obviously, a coach who is blessed with having three phenomenally talented players like Besser, Pettersson, Quinn Hughes in three consecutive years, I mean, you're going to look pretty good in terms of your development of young players and your deployment of them. But I like the fact that he really made these guys earn it, especially Besser and Pettersson. Hughes is a little bit different, that I think he was just a little bit further along in terms of what he was ready for right away. But he made those guys really earn the ice time and didn't put too much pressure on them in years when really the pressure wasn't needed because they weren't that competitive.
One of the things he said today on Hockey Central, Travis Green, that is talking about, okay, the deployment of a guy like Quinn Hughes on power play, that they didn't want to put him in the spot and then have to take him off and, you know, hurt his confidence that way. Is that fair to approach it in that way? Or is the flip side of that argument is, okay, well, there's the struggle, and then you have to mentally overcome it, and that's part of your development as a player. Is one way better than the other?
I don't think you can just put a blanket statement on that. A lot of it would be the individual knowing the person, but there is a lot of, I mean, any of those three top picks that we just discussed, and I mean, Hughes especially, we look at him, a lot of pressure on him coming in. And so you already know there's a lot of pressure and potential pitfalls to navigate. You don't want to heap on and pile even more on. And so there is nothing wrong with waiting until you're more than sure that the player can handle it on a regular basis. You can sort of test the waters, wait until it's, like last year, all the argument about, well, why isn't Quinn Hughes playing on the top power play right away, and Travis Green was adamant that, like, that was Alex Edler's spot at that time. Like, it was so few games. It was this testing period to really get an understanding of what they could expect from him this year. So why put that extra pressure on him? And I liked that at the time, that you just wait and see and sort of let him go and really earn it. And there is nothing wrong. And that is one thing that is really missing from the league nowadays, as opposed to 10, 15 years ago, this idea of having to go out and earn it. Young players, it didn't matter how good you were, you had to go through this lineup of veterans each and every night in order to move up the roster at all. And so I do believe that some coaches, and Travis Green is one, who's believe that it's better to make sure that there is at least some aspect of that where you have to earn it, have to make sure that you're understanding how much you appreciate these opportunities and all of those things. And I think there's nothing wrong with that from a coaching philosophy. And then you have to be careful about managing expectations. That is such an important thing, whether it's on a fan base, but also within your locker room and on your young players, making sure that they sort of take the proper steps. And some guys are faster and can run up that staircase a little bit quicker than others. Some take longer, but you have to go through those steps. You can't just all of a sudden be a 10-year veteran overnight. you can play like it in some ways, but you don't have all the nuance and the complete roundedness of your game that you want. You ultimately want these guys to develop into.
Before we get to some of the management stuff, we had Mikey DiPietro on earlier this week, and you know, he said something that was really fascinating about, you know, he used to approach the game as far as the mental aspect, as you know, he says, like, I have to be good, and I have to be good tonight, and I've got to be good in this practice. And now he's starting to look at it as, you know, I have an opportunity, and there's no qualification of what level of he has to perform to. It's just like, I have an opportunity to do something, and whether it's that, you know, something that he loves, something that he can improve on, an opportunity to be good, whatever it is. At his age, to hear that, you know, Scott and I were kind of blown away at just how, you know, how much perspective he had for a player that's 20 years old. It was just starting to think of, at what point in your career did you kind of click that, or did it ever come for you?
It's hard to say. I will say that I don't know. Did DiPietro mention, like, he's working with someone different to sort of unlock that with him? Like, to me, that's kind of an interesting part of it. Yeah. So that part of it is who you work along with, right? And who you get coached by, or if you're working with sports psychologists or mental skills training and all those sorts of things. Like, they sometimes it's just a different way of teaching the skill, and then the player interprets it, and it really, like, sort of hits home with you that it really is a part of it. But I will say this, that players nowadays, even really young players, like young athletes and children in general, like, I think there's more emphasis on sort of the just your mental skills training and your demeanor and the way you're going to approach things. From a, you know, physical training has been something that we're pretty far along the lines with in athletics, but mental performance training, especially in sort of like rah-rah tough guy type of sports, I think is lagging behind. I think there's been an emphasis longer in individual sports because there's so much just hinging on you, and you optimize every aspect of your life. But I think in team sports, that's lacking, but it's coming. And so young players now, I guess the point I'm getting at, are farther ahead than I would have been. And to me, I always thought of it that you would go to, and I think this is something in our culture that has shifted as well, when it comes down to seeing a psychiatrist or a psychologist or anything, it's, oh, I'm broken, I need help. That would have been a mindset, you know, a generation ago, whereas now it's, this is part of me being better. And I think especially in sports, you can really see that. So getting that understanding and wrapping your head around it. And it's also an interesting shift away from a perfectionist mindset, which essentially is crippling, because it's like everything has, like this point he makes about having to be good today, that's like all I'm judged on is this. All I'm judged on is how I'm going to perform in this moment, whereas that really isn't me. This is getting pretty deep on it, but the idea is it shifts away. And I love the fact that it's like, hey, this is about opportunity. This is a chance for me to go out and play a game I love and have this great chance and an opportunity to be successful and enjoy it. It's a different mindset that then frees you to go out and perform and be more expressive in your individuality, and rather than just being stuck in like, oh, failure isn't acceptable, I'm only judged on my success and I have to be good, otherwise I'm a failure and everything. And that becomes crippling, because that perfectionist mindset is something that can be very debilitating for an athlete.
Well, and often that allows, or that causes someone, I should say, to look back on what are viewed as mistakes or faults and focus on those instead of what he or she can control moving forward. Alex Hall joining us, as he does every single week. Jim Benning, of course, has to worry about what's going forward, yet we're judging him on some of the moves he made last summer along the way. How do we evaluate management with an incomplete grade on the Canucks' regular season?
Well, it's a fascinating question, because I sort of saw the tweet you guys put out before I joined you, and it's like, you know, how good an offseason was it for this year? And it's like, well, in some ways you can look at it and be like, since there's so much unknown, we can't put a full grade on it. But at the same time, based on what we do know and based on what was known going into the regular season this year, that's really the only way we can evaluate at this point. I don't know that there were two players who were added to a roster, and I'm going to include Quinn Hughes in this because he was his little stint last year of four games or whatever it was, that had such a big impact in a positive way in the Jim Benning era as this season. Quinn Hughes, JT Miller, those two guys have come in, and in terms of two people coming in and making such an impression, that's a massive win for Jim Benning. Now, I know that's a draft a couple years ago for Quinn Hughes, but just the everything around him, that Benning can own that, and the fact that he's their his draft pick. So those two guys have come in and done phenomenal things. You know, and even I think most people now are beyond the fact of the price of what JT Miller was. Even, you know, at the time of that trade, a lot of people couldn't wrap their heads around the fact that it was a, you know, a first round pick and all these things. But Miller has proven to me, and I think to almost everyone else, that he's well worth that investment. And then I guess the other aspect is you look at the other, you know, the revamping of the defense. Quinn Hughes is a big part of it. And yes, the additions of Ben and Myers helped in terms of depth on the back end. But the long-term ramifications of what Tyler Myers and his contract will mean to this club, that remains to be seen. So in the short term, I would say the off-season moves last year helped this year. They didn't help to alleviate cap concerns going forward, and they probably put them in further jeopardy of being in cap trouble when you look at the Myers deal and the length of it. But when you look at the results from this season, you have to view it as a positive off-season, in my opinion.
I posed this to Scott yesterday. I'll pose it to you as well. Of the forwards, because I think that's probably the most toughest decisions or that Jim Benning's going to have to make moving forward. Of the forwards alone, there's roughly 16 guys that you would consider, you know, could be brought back. I gave you an over-under of 10. Do you take the over or under of should come back?
Should. I would say, okay, I have a really hard time with should and the difference between that and what they actually could do. Like I'm very much a realist. I live in reality.
Right.
I would
can provide two answers. That's fine.
Yeah. You could make the argument that less should come back, that you'd say under, if you want to continue to move forward and improve. That could prove very difficult, assuming if we look at it and say, assuming everything stays status quo, which it won't, there will be massive changes that we can't really predict. But I just think that it'd be difficult to move on from some players that maybe you'd want to. But it wouldn't surprise me if it's in that range of only 9 forwards coming back. Like I think that there's going to continue to be movement, but you guys have obviously had an extra day to think about this. So I'll hear your answers on it.
And again, like we can just do this step by step. Bick threw that at me yesterday, and that's kind of how I went through the process. So let's just go through the names. Miller. Yes,
he's gone.
Right?
You got to get rid of him. Yeah.
I mean, but I know these are obvious, but just as we count our way to 10,
for
Miller
sure,
is back. EP is back.
Yeah.
Horvat's back.
Yep.
Besser.
Yes.
Roussel.
That, to me, I view him as back. I don't know that he's a guy I'm not afraid of moving on from if you have a better option, and especially at his money.
Gaudette.
I would bring him back.
Zach MacEwen.
Yes.
Tyler Mott.
Yes.
Tyler Toffoli.
Yes, with an asterisk. I mean,
if you can, right? Depending on your salary cap situation.
In fact, he's UFA and could command a lot. Who knows? Yeah.
Jake Virtanen.
Again, I say yes, but is there more value in moving on from him and what's your return? And I think there's a number of guys that are in that situation.
One of Beagle or Sutter.
Yeah, I don't see how keeping both of those guys makes you a better team, and gives you the flexibility you need. That they even when healthy this year, they showed they weren't able to be that that 3-4 punch they were looking for, which is a crazy way to look at this considering their price. When I was going to say 1-2 punch at the bottom of your lineup in terms of down the middle shutdown type guys, and you put all that load on Horvat anyway. I don't see that the value is in their combined contract to have two of those guys.
But probably one guy's back, right? Just for
center depth. I would say one of them back, yeah.
Tanner Pearson.
Yes.
So now we're at 10. And that's with waivers on Roussel and JV, kind of depends what the situation looks like. And I didn't even mention Josh Levo yet. So that's kind of where I came out on this, that there are going to be, I would probably take the over. If you gave me 10, I would guess that over comes back. I can understand exactly what you said. Hey, you make the case for, you got to at least talk about this. You got to at least talk about that. But when I just simply go through the process, I figure there's more than 10 coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that that's why actually that the number you gave of 10 is a good one, because I can see it easily being right in around there one either way. And it makes sense within a lot of sort of frames of logic. So that's why you said it well as a good gambling man, Bick. You understand the over-under concept.
I work pretty hard at this.
I think we tell.
We're going to start just calling him Book Nazar. That's it. He's our book.
Oh, wow. All right. I like that.
Pick the book. Hey, Aldi,
and
great
look,
stuff as always.
And we close the book on the interview and the week.
Yeah, that's right. How we roll. That's how we roll. Aldi, hey, stay safe
Stealing
and healthy.
Segues.
Same to All your right. segment. Same to your family as well, I should say, Aldi. Thank you, buddy.
My segment here at in my house. Yes, we are. Same to everyone. Stay safe out there, and hopefully it's a positive weekend for everyone.
Alex Ald, back on Monday on the program. What's coming up on the program today, Book?
We're going to chat with our fan Gafar at 5 o'clock, plus our usual hijinks that we've been doing for the past 2 weeks here. We'll check in on a couple of employees and our isolation mailbags. We get your questions in 650, come 4 o'clock. And actually, hey, Scott, before we leave, I want to echo this before we head off for the weekend. I've seen you post a bunch of times on Instagram, just talking about messages to the community. And I want to echo this. Because it's been a great message you've been putting out. Like, this is obviously a really tough time. If anyone's like struggling to talk or whatever it is, you can jump in my DMs. You can jump in Scott's DMs. They're always available for anyone over this weekend. That if you're having a tough time, like I may not have the answers, but I'm always here to listen. So don't hesitate to reach out over the course of the weekend if you're struggling.
Well said, sir. And I echo those as well. That's Bick Nazar, Bick the Book. He's back on the program this afternoon. He's got to go book the rest of that show. Richard Deitch among the guests coming up next with Dan Riccio, Randeep Janda. And yes, everything Bick said there, I'm off until Monday as far as what you're going to hear on air. You need me? You need to reach out? You don't feel like there's someone else you can talk to? You just want somebody to bounce something off? Find me at Scott Rintoul on Twitter. We can have a conversation. We can set something up. Have yourselves a great weekend. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Salute those healthcare workers tonight at 7 o'clock. Get out on your deck. Get out on your lawn. Open your window. Make a little bit of noise. Riccio and Randeep make noise next on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650.